Brings on our next guest, Randy Mueller. He's a former NFL executive, also spent time in the Alliance of American Football with the Salt Lake Stallions, the XFL. He's been all over the place and currently hosts the Football GM podcast on The Athletic. Randy, thank you for carving out some time for us on Saturday. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. My pleasure to be with you guys.
Now, let's start off with that news that you're barely coming across. Buffalo is a place that is notorious for getting some of these crazy snowstorms. There have been multiple games played there in the snow. What are your thoughts on the fact that they're actually moving that game from tomorrow to Monday?
Well, if they got to this extreme, there's no doubt the forecast is shaky at best. And you're right. They're used to dealing with snow in Buffalo.
Yeah.
So that tells me they've got something major on the way. And I think it makes sense. I mean, the NFL can hog three full days instead of 2.5 now. And I don't think anybody will suffer with ratings on a Monday late afternoon game, even in the West. So I think it makes sense. I think there's anytime there's safety involved, the NFL is going to be up for whatever's best to keep the visitors, the fans, everybody safe. And not only that, but the players and the staff.
Well, first of all, hello again, boss. It's been a minute.
Boss,
I know
awesome.
That voice. I know that voice.
You've been in this industry for a long, long time. With the playoffs kind of coming up and Pro Bowl selections coming up, there's been a lot of talk about per capita, the amount of talent that the state of Utah produces in the NFL, whether it's via college or whether these are kids that actually played high school ball and moved on. You know, when you were in the process of putting together rosters, you know, how seriously, you know, were you looking at guys that came from Utah for one reason or another?
I think it's always been a fairly high priority targeted area, Michelle, but I think you're right. Even more so now, you see players that are excelling at the highest level in the NFL, and so you do want to dip into that. The other thing is, I think it's a credit to the programs collegiately, whether it's Kyle at Utah or at BYU, what they've been able to produce. A lot of top talented kids come through there, and you know you're going to get kids that are coached up well. They have also the DNA of winning, and I think that's important. So you get guys that actually understand the professional game, and you really just take them, and they've kind of been pros already. They've worked at a pace where they're going to be asked to do that still at the NFL level. So there's less guesswork and less dots to connect when people come from that area to the NFL.
Now, Randy, the NFL is an interesting animal out there because I look at, so I'm going to use the example of Puka Nacua here. Obviously, BYU, when they had him on the field at BYU, he was awesome. But his big question mark coming out of BYU was his health. He only played, I think, 7 games his final season in Provo. And then he comes out and has put together a potential offensive rookie of the year type campaign for the Los Angeles Rams. What do you attribute that to? Because this is a guy, like I said, who his big thing why he dropped to the 5th round for most people was his ability to stay on the field. And he's been healthy this entire year and has put together one of those more marvelous seasons, a record-breaking season, in fact, for a rookie.
Yeah, it's a storybook story for sure. I credit him for this. He is obviously taking care of his body. He's been able to endure a full season, like you said. But I think part of the reason he slipped as well is that his strength is his instincts and his innate ability to play football. And sometimes those little things that are intangibles are really hard for scouts to really recognize. They can go to a pro day and watch a guy run 4.4 and think, wow, this guy can really do this or that. But you really have to dive into the tape and study a full body of work to get that instinctive, intangible side of his game. And maybe it's because of the injuries and his body work was, you know, disrupted because of that. Maybe the scouts didn't see that, but the first thing I saw this year when I watched tape on him was the instincts and the natural football ability to adjust on the fly and make plays that normally guys can't make, especially young guys in our league.
I know when we were working together, I think I was pretty annoying talking about that 2019 Utah football team and in the lead up to that season, how good I thought that they would be. And I think part of that's because Dennis was so critical to recruiting a lot of those guys that were on that team. But now we're seeing those guys produce in the NFL. Jalen Johnson just named an all-pro selection. You have Zach Moss that kind of came on strong this year. Julian Blackman came on strong. Matt Gase had a really great season. You know, looking back, what do you think of the guys that kind of came out of that class for Utah?
Well, I think it's an awesome class, and you're right. It's a testament, really, I think, to the program and the fact that they can teach football skills. I find that NFL scouts nowadays and a lot of evaluators, even above the scouting level, will use measurables to determine exactly what a player can or cannot do, and they put a cap on somebody if they don't run as fast or if they're not as big and strong measured on paper. And I think that team itself was a testament that it was football players. It was a lot of guys like we just talked about with Nacua. It's instinctive football players that play beyond their measurables. And I think a lot of people think, well, that's overachieving. It's really not overachieving, because part of the equation is intangibles. And you have to be able to, as an evaluator, measure that and then also record that with decision makers. A lot of times, if guys don't run fast, the main decision maker never gets to see them. So you're dependent on some lower level scouting guys, and that's not good. Trust me, because I think they're less apt to recommend players who don't jump out after a workout or a pro day.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Like, when it comes to the NFL draft process, there are just so many players out there to have to evaluate. And you're right, you as a GM or an executive, you do have to rely on your scouts to be able to go out there and find guys. What is the workload like for an NFL executive in the draft process versus, obviously, you have to manage the current roster, you have to deal with coaches, so many different things, so many different hats you're wearing. How much can you really dedicate to the talent discovery process?
Well, I think it's probably the most misjudged element of the job is all the other things that you just said. Guys that get these GM jobs now, I think the people doing the hiring sometimes think we can just take this guy, put him in a room, and let him pick players. That's about 10% of the job. The rest of it is all the other things that you said. It's dealing with people. It's managing issues. It's fixing things that go haywire during the course of the season. And it's allocating your time and really listening to build consensus, to keep everybody on the same page. It's a full-time job to keep everybody in a building on the same page. As Michelle can tell you, we're all about 3 games away from a total mutiny if you don't watch it. So whether the mutiny comes from within, that's the biggest problem. So you've got to be able to keep and manage and communicate with people, hear people out, and that's the task that a lot of these GMs struggle with most. They wish they could just sit in a room and evaluate and draw up ideas about players and things that they like about them, but that's not part of it. I know this. It was the thing that I coveted the most as a GM, and I used to tell the people around me, give me some time today carved out so I can actually look at film. It's the hardest thing to get time to do, but yet that's your livelihood. And sometimes what I would find is I would find myself looking at tape from 7 o'clock at night till 10 because it was quiet, or I'd be in there early at 5 a.m. and I'd have till 8 before distraction started. So your days are long, that's for sure.
That feels like a pretty good segue into the spring leagues. And the first one obviously was here in Salt Lake with the Stallions. And then obviously you've gone on with the XFL a couple of different times. But specifically looking at the time in Salt Lake, communication was a big thing that you drove home with all of us on your staff. And just making sure that you're available. But, you know, looking back on that time, was there anything like just particularly crazy or that stood out to you? It felt like our team actually was in pretty good shape as far as not causing problems, unlike others. But what do you remember most about being here in Salt Lake?
Well, it was a challenging set of circumstances for sure, Michelle. And I smile when you mention some of the things that really were struggling for us. And the biggest thing that we had to deal with was the lack of facilities. That was hard. We were at a disadvantage. And in fact, after the league went by the wayside, Bill Polian called me one day and he said, hey, I just got to apologize to you. He said, we put you in an untenable situation with facilities and all the things that came with it. We were at a big disadvantage. As you know, we built locker rooms out of shipping containers out by RSL, and including showers and everything else. And there should be a 30 for 30 just on the setup that we have.
Yeah.
We spent a lot of time on buses. And truth be known, we spent more time in San Antonio, Texas than we did in Salt Lake just because the facilities were better for us there. So it was challenging. But, hey, the reason I did it was for all that reason. I had 30 years in the NFL already. I've been fortunate. I didn't have to do anything. But I love that team-building aspect, that camaraderie with the people. And that's why I did it. And they allowed me to have some bandwidth to hire the people that I wanted to hire and people I enjoyed being around. And he mentioned Dennis, one of my favorite people of all time, people like yourself and others that I just loved. And that's the part that is fun when you're experiencing crazy things like you mentioned, but yet it's with the people you want to be around. So that's a fun, it's valuable at the end of the day. I'll say this, I've been involved in three of these spring leagues now where you built teams from scratch. Mm-hmm. If NFL GMs had that opportunity, it would make them so much better than just going through that experience of building teams from scratch. They have no idea, because most of these guys that get these NFL jobs now haven't really built anything. Sometimes they're two chairs away from the GM spot, and they get given one of these opportunities. So building and having reps at building, I thought, was really important, and there are very few that get that chance. Sometimes you might get a chance in the NFL to do it once, but I feel lucky because I've got to do it three times in the spring league, and maybe you're not adding NFL-quality players all the time, but the process itself of building is something that's very valuable.
I can definitely see that. You bringing up the staying in San Antonio thing, I think you might enjoy this because I don't think I ever said anything. But the day that you asked me to come downstairs to talk to you about staying longer in San Antonio, I was in a panic. I thought for sure you were going to fire me. So
bring your playbook, Michelle.
Yes. So I was actually quite relieved when it was just, are you available to stay longer in San Antonio? And I mean, maybe if I had thought about it a little bit harder, I would have said no. Just kidding. No, I would not have said no. But I don't think it really sunk in, like, how much longer we were going to stay there. I was just so relieved that it wasn't, like, a bad news thing. So that made me laugh, and that was really, I don't know, an interesting time, very, very interesting getting stuck out in San Antonio for an extra month while we waited for shipping containers.
Yeah, it was an interesting and challenging time, like we've often said. But, hey, think about it. When are you going to get that kind of experience, especially at your age, to go through something like that? Those are memories you'll have the rest of your life. And, yeah, maybe all of them or a lot of them were challenging, but it was a great experience. It made us all better. It obviously kindled some friendships that we'll have forever. And I looked at it as a positive. It was challenging. And like we used to say during that time, you can't make this stuff up. It seemed like every week we had new challenges.
Randy, before we let you go, I just wanted to get your thought on the playoffs as a whole. It feels like to me, and I'll get your thought on this because I listen to you on the Football GM podcast often, but do you think that this playoffs for the NFL is as open as most people think it is? Because I think it could be wide open.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think obviously the teams with the bye, the 49ers and the Ravens, are, you know, sitting and watching now. But I truly think you could make a case for anybody to beat anybody, even when those teams get involved. So it's always the way of it's about matchups in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And the matchups within rosters and within teams and within coordinators and staffs are fascinating to me. And I think a lot of people see the players on the field, but there's a lot more to it than that. And I always like to dig into the coordinators matchup because now they're studying everything that happened during the season to get ready for one game. Coaching really matters in the playoffs, and especially at the highest level, the further you get into the playoffs. The other thing is, some of these teams have played each other. When you get division rivals that have played each other twice already, it is really hard. And I'm not sure who has the advantage in matchups to where if it's a third game, for example, if the Browns had to play the Ravens again or the Steelers. And there's no secrets, and it's fun to watch what these coaches will come up with next. So I agree with you. I think it's a wide-open playoffs, maybe as wide open as I can remember the last few years.
What is the coldest temperature you've ever experienced in the NFL? Because they're talking about the Kansas City thing tonight, -30 potentially with wind chills. Have you ever experienced anything like that?
Well, I don't know. I've never experienced something that cold, and I've experienced some crazy weather. One time we played in Kansas City as well when I was in Seattle, and there were literally white caps on the field. It had rained so long and so far. I'm serious. There were white caps on the field, and the game got suspended for a couple hours. In fact, you'll get a kick out of this. I had to go down on the field to talk. Dennis was our coach with the Seahawks, Dennis Erickson. And the league wanted to know, what are you going to do if we cancel this game? When do you want to come back? Do you want to do this? Do you want to do that? I said, well, I don't want to really decide this on my own. I got to go see Dennis. And so during the game, you'll get a kick out of this. I'm in a suit and tie and rain boots up to my knees, and I'm waiting down on the sidelines in a monsoon. And I tap Dennis on the shoulder, and he looks over at me, what the heck are you doing here? He knew that was not the place for me. And I asked him this real quickly, and he said, I don't care what you do, just get us out of here. Just get us out of this weather. I don't care when we come back. I just don't want to be here. Needless to say, they postponed it again, and we finished it that night. But crazy weather brings crazy stories, that's for sure.
That's awesome. Well, Randy, it's awesome to hear from you. We'll do it again soon, hopefully. Maybe have you on as the playoffs kind of progress here. But keep good work with the Football GM podcast. Encourage everybody to subscribe to that and listen to it. And obviously, keep up the other stuff. I know you have your website and everything. What all are you doing? Like, kind of explain where you're at these days.
Well, I am really with The Athletic full-time, and they've been really good to me. I write for them weekly, and like you said, do a podcast with Mike Sando, their national writer, and we've done that for about 3 years now. So my full-time duty, and which allows me to have a life, I'm a hunter and a fisherman, as Michelle can tell you, and I spend a lot of time at Lake Coeur d'Alene, but I can't do that in this wintertime, so The Athletic keeps me plenty busy, that's for sure.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, thanks for taking the time today. And as I said, we'll have you back on soon to talk more about the NFL and reminisce on old times with the Stallions, et cetera. All right.
Sounds good, guys. Good to be with you.
There you go. Randy Mueller, I guess I should say just from The Athletic now.